from the hallowed halls of Flood Law, via the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, this is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. With your law expert, Todd Flood. Brought to you by Flood Law. Flood Law, when it matters. Visit floodlaw.com. Now get ready with your legal questions for one of the Great Lakes' leading attorneys by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Now here's your host, Todd Flood.
We're back. Where did the time go? A lot to cover. A lot to cover tonight. We have a lot in the news. A lot of great topics to talk about. We promised we would get into this young lady that was murdered out at Eastern Michigan University. That they still don't have the killer, and we put out our information as we are working on the case and believe that there's a potential serial killer with this matter. And we've been asked to hold off a little bit, and we're going to, because law enforcement now is looking in to one of the people that we put out as a suspect. So I have to put that on hold briefly. However, there's plenty more to talk about, and someone that's I'm not going to delay getting into the guest coming in tonight. We have one of the best investigative reporters in the state, if not the Midwest, if not the country. He's won many awards. I've worked with him. He's interviewed me, and I know something about Kevin Dietz. He's insanely thorough and has a passion for what he does. And he's been watching this and reporting on this police officer's case down at Frank Murphy Hall of Justice in front of no other than one of our regular guests on the show, Judge Vonda Evans. Officer Melendez is obviously someone that's been under a lot of scrutiny, it seems like, from his past, is now charged, and you have a huge fight going on between two gladiators. Bob Donaldson, a longtime prosecutor and a staple of Frank Murphy, and one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the area, Jim Thomas, who is defending Melendez. And we have Kevin Dietz here, who's been following it. Kevin, you with us?
Hey, Todd, how are you?
Good, my friend. Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing well.
Are you watching any high school football?
We are. We're keeping tabs on it. My alma mater, Brother Rice, had a rough year this year, which is pretty rare, but I'm still watching the other teams.
All right. Go Berkeley Bears. All right. So anyway, so Kevin, your reputation procedure, you're one of the best. Tell us a little bit. You've been watching the Melendez case?
Well, today was really a big day, a big decision day for William Melendez, his attorney, and he decided that he's not going to take the stand. So we will not hear from Bill Melendez, or the jury will not hear from him, on his thoughts of what happened that day. And that's really a big deal, because if you followed the case at all, you'll remember Floyd Dent was a motorist from Inkster who was driving, and he was pulled over for running the stop sign by Bill Melendez and his partner. And the partner testified earlier in this trial, and there was kind of a bombshell there. The prosecutor, Mr. Donaldson, was able to get his text messages, and in his text messages, he used the N-word over 30 times in the month and a half following Mr. Dent's arrest, and it had a huge impact on the jury. And the judge, Vonda Evans, said, look, you can use this to the credibility of what this witness is telling you. And the reason that's so important is because there's really only three people who were there right in the middle of it all, and that's Floyd Dent, who did testify and told his story, William Melendez, who's not testifying at all, and this officer, Zielinski, who testified, but his credibility was put into question by his racist text messages. Hmm. So it was a big decision for Melendez not to take the stand.
So, yeah, well, obviously, Jim, probably looking at the case with Melendez, said, you know, the burden's on the prosecution, and they didn't meet their burden. One, two, there aren't good answers to the questions for which you'll get, and three, You know, it's one of those things. How can you answer or rebut? You may illuminate someone using the N word, or and get their eye off the ball as it relates to what it was that happened. Was anyone ever charged in this case with ethnic intimidation? I mean, was Melendez? Did he use the N word in his text messages? Did he not?
And that's a great point, because Donaldson also got all of Melendez's text messages, and there was nothing even remotely wrong in any of his text messages. So Melendez does not have a problem there. It's more the perception of you know what his partner was texting, and quite frankly, I think it was a good idea probably for Melendez not to get on the stand, because he really wasn't going to say too many things different than all the other witnesses said. Each of the defense witnesses was making a case that that Melendez was doing his job, and that Floyd Dent was resisting in the way he drove away from, not he didn't flee, but he didn't stop immediately when the overhead lights went on. It took him a little while to pull over, and then when the police were walking up to his door, he opened his door instead of rolling down his window. And then when he was thrown to the ground, he wasn't handcuffed immediately, and when Melendez was punching him, he was raising his hands up. Obviously, the prosecution says that was to defend himself from Melendez's punches, but the witnesses who looked at the video said, no, this is an officer who's doing his job, and he is with a person who's resisting, and he's doing what's necessary to get this guy in custody. And so, you know, the jury is looking at this video, and they watch the video probably 15, 20 times. Wow. During this trial. Wow. And one side is saying this video is showing assault with intent to do great bodily harm, assault with strangulation, and the other side is saying this exact same video is showing that this police officer did not do anything wrong, that he just did his job. So wow. It's very interesting.
It reminds me, and I had a similar situation, a similar case that I was involved in, and the analogy it always cracks me up a little bit is when we the Detroit Lions were in the playoffs last year. Where is that team right now? And the penalty which cost us a first down, where they threw the flag on pass interference. And if you listen to the announcers on the radio from Dallas at the time, it was an absolute improper call. They picked up the flag. That's the right move. There was no penalty there. And everybody with the eyes that didn't lie to them and saw the interference by the defender knew it was a penalty. Here, in this particular case, everyone that's seen that video has to walk away with it saying, are you kidding me? I mean, the abuse that looked from which it looked like it was sustained on Mr. Dent. I mean, you've seen that video. A lot of people, almost it's palpable to see how many strikes are going down on this particular situation.
I thought it was kind of interesting, Todd. You know, the first time that the video was shown for the jury, the prosecutor showed it, and they showed it slow motion, frame by frame, and you could see the jurors' faces just being blown away by what they were looking at. But then the tape got played again and again and again and again and again and again, and they sort of become a little desensitized to it as you watch it over and over again. And maybe that was on purpose, you know, for the defense, and maybe not. But you got kind of a sense that they're like, all right, play the video again, you know. But people weren't like just, you know, sitting on the edge of their seat or looking away from the footage, you know, by the 15th time it was played. And they were kind of trying to watch. Well, was Melendez's arm on his chin and mouth, or was it underneath on his throat? You know, what was he trying to do? What was Dent trying to do?
Right.
The prosecution could not have been clearer. Their case was pretty simple. They said that Floyd Dent didn't do anything wrong. He opened his door and then was immediately thrown to the ground, grabbed by Melendez and punched. That's kind of the story. Look at the video. Is that what you see? The defense, you know, they kept working through it, saying there's more to it. There's another way to look at this thing.
I got to love it. I mean, that's actually a great strategy, and one you have to use, and I'll get to that strategy when we get back right after this. Kevin, can you stay with us for a few more?
Sure, no problem.
All right. We'll be right back right after this.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR and get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. We're back, and we have the good fortune of having one of the top investigative reporters in our area and throughout the state, Kevin Dietz. And Kevin has been following closely the Melendez trial and reporting on it to his listeners and audience about the details of that case, because it's one that has kind of plagued this type of issue anyway, has plagued the United States, where we've had police brutality. Here in this particular situation, Kevin was just explaining to us two great attorneys in the trenches going at it with Robert Donaldson from the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, and you got Jim Thomas, who is one of the best defense attorneys in the Midwest, if not the country. He has handled some of the biggest cases in our state, and he was walking through, Kevin, you were telling us he was walking through the jury and perhaps in a great strategy to, and you use a good word, to desensitize the jury by playing it over and over and over again to it's lost its shock and awe, it's lost its impact, and to get every position potentially anyway of what was going on with what was in the mind of Melendez. Was he just out there doing a beat down here on Mr. Dent, and was it based out of rage and not subduing him properly to police protocol and actually causing great bodily harm, or was he in fact acting within the rights of his protocol and how to make an arrest? You had an interesting witness yesterday. You had a gentleman, a doctor, who is a law enforcement officer and also someone that teaches restraints. How did that impact the jury, if you could tell?
Well, Dr. Westrick was on the stand, and I think it was interesting and important because we heard testimony from some of the police officers about whether that was a chokehold or whether Melendez was restraining Floyd Dent on the ground with his arm around his neck or face area. And Westrick testified that it was not a chokehold, that there's a distinct difference between choking somebody and restraining them. And so, again, they go back to the video and they look, is Melendez's arm around his chin and his mouth, or is it around his throat and his neck? And is he pulling and lunging and yanking at his neck, or is he, trying to lock him down into position so that Dent can be handcuffed? So the witness definitely gave the jury a lot to think about and gave the jury another opinion that maybe this wasn't a choke. And if it was a choke, it might have looked quite a bit different. So I think it was effective. Jim Thomas had another difficult task in addition to overcoming that video. He needed to get the jury to think what it would be like to be a police officer late at night in the dark in the city of Inkster, driving around, right, doing traffic stops. And so he had to spend a lot of time trying to get the idea across to jurors that this is a dangerous area, that they thought Mr. Dent had drugs because he was in the area where drugs are often sold, that he was weaving his car, which could be an indication that maybe he was reaching for a gun or hiding narcotics in his car. So they were doing a lot of painting of pictures for the jury to try and sway them to feel that Melendez was just doing his job, a very dangerous and difficult job. And the prosecution, you know, was telling another story. And it's interesting because usually the prosecution
right.
is all pro-police. And in this case, they're sort of taking the other side. They're saying, well, the police aren't always good. The police aren't always. So it was kind of interesting. So Donaldson, he went out of his way to go back and pull all the records of drug busts or drug arrests in the motel on Michigan Avenue that they were discussing, the area that was so dangerous. And today it came out that there was only one in the past year. So the jury's really, really hearing two different stories, two completely different stories.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as a prosecutor, most of the time, you're absolutely right. You're trying to bring out when, for example, if it was a drug case and someone was delivering or selling drugs on the street in that particular area, and the police officers made a stop because they allegedly saw the furtive gesture of a hand-to-hand sale, the prosecutor immediately gets into, well, how many times have you been on a drug bust? How many times have you made arrest? Have you been in this particular location and area before? Yes. Does it have a reputation for, you know, the high crime rate of dealing with drugs in this particular section of whatever city or part you're in? And so at the luxury of Mr. Donaldson, he was able to go into the database at the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office through Inkster and find that there wasn't so many drug busts at a particular hotel or location. That's interesting that he had to turn the tables of something he normally would probably be on the opposite of. So if you had to sum it up, how many days of testimony has there been, first of all?
I think it's been seven.
7 days. So they've soaked on this case for a while. That's a lot. And if you had to sum it up, I mean, do you see any clear, you know, slam dunk by one way or the other?
Well, I think that the prosecution clearly showed that Floyd Dent did not have any cocaine in his system. The defense worked hard to show that the cocaine that was discovered that night was not planted by Melendez and that it was in Floyd Dent's car. So there's all this back and forth, as there are in any trials, I suppose. But I think this jury is really going to be battling it out. It's going to come down to credibility. And it's, do you believe these police officers who got up on the stand and testified in Melendez's favor? Do you feel like they're covering for Melendez, or do you think they're straight up telling what happened and just telling it like it is in support of Melendez? And I think one really good witness was Vicki Yost. She was the police chief in Inkster at the time this happened, and she tells it like it is no matter who she's talking to.
And does she tell it for the prosecution or for the defense?
She was called for the defense.
Okay.
And she went in and told the jury what she thought. And she said it was painful for her to watch the video of her officer punching Dent in the head 16 times. But she also said that as she did her investigation and went through it and talked to everyone and looked at that video, that she believed it was necessary for Melendez to do that to bring this situation under control. And she had a lot of credibility, so I think that's going to be a split jury who really is going to have to work hard to try and convince all 12 to go one way or the other.
Sounds like a hung jury to me. I mean, that sounds like reasonable doubt. If you have to, if you have had to raise the specter of what it really happened out there and how it happened as a question, then that's reasonable doubt. So we'll see. I mean, that's something that's. When does the jury get the case?
They're wrapping it up. The defense rested, so the judge wants to take the jury out to the scene on Tuesday to look around so they can get a feel for the scene themselves.
I got it.
And then closing arguments right after that.
One last thing before I let you go. Did any of Melendez's past conduct come out during this trial?
No, and I'm guessing that's part of the reason he did not take the stand, because the word RoboCop was never mentioned. The 13 lawsuits against him were never mentioned. Being indicted by the feds and being acquitted never was mentioned. So the jury has no information other than what happened on that night in January.
Well, I raise tip my hat to both the attorneys and Kevin. You are stellar as always. Love having you on the show. Thank you so much for being on, and we'll touch base soon, my friend.
Thanks. Have a great night.
You too. We'll be right back with Behind the Bench after this.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. You know, I know football season's still going here, strong and hard. Obviously, Lions having some issues. Hopefully, we can get the energy back and the team back and find what it is that's missing right now on this team. I'm a believer that. You know, I mince no bones. I think that some of the wisdom of that team had left when Dominic Raiola, one of the greater leaders of that team, he, believe it or not, you know, summa cum laude out of Nebraska, he's a football guy of football guys. He was down that front line. If nothing else, having him around out on that field or you know, helping the younger players. He called the audibles. He's the one that called the plays for the line. And I don't know. Something's there that we're missing. I don't know if it's the wisdom, the gel, the energy. I don't know. But one thing that came out of this last week, and it's this concussion, and now you have Will Smith, who is delivers obviously front headline here on the second page within the New York, and the Detroit news. Concussion movie delivers hard hit to NFL, and then lo and behold, we have another concussion that took place on one of the players. I will tell you this: I follow football. It's one of my therapies anyway. I love watching football and all the way up from the Pop Warner to the junior highs to the high schools. And this time of year for the high school season, it's amazing. But what scares me more than anything, and I can't tell you how many games I've watched this year and watching it now, and I've gone to and went to the Southfield Oak Park game, and I saw some bells rung. And I'm looking at these helmets and the velocity of the game right now, and what's not being protected to the extent that it should be, and the standards that aren't being followed that should be, as far as the X's and O's of how to tackle, keeping your head up, and the proper gear. You're seeing more kids on the sidelines, and then later on in life, battling issues that were caused by some of these concussions that they sustained in the high school gridiron on the football fields. We had as one of our guests here the owner of Zenith, who the company, it's a Dan Gilbert company, built the helmets are being built and assembled right here in Detroit. It's the only helmet that has a 5-star rating. That's how they rate helmets nowadays. It's the only helmet that has a 5-star rating. I got to tell you, I'm looking at the injuries here and the injury list of these high school players. Something has to be done for us to be able to subsidize or get funding for these kids that are out there, because you change the trajectory of one's life if they sustain these concussions. I'm looking forward to seeing this Will Smith movie, and I can tell you this much, the lawsuits, and I've been consulted on, and I have gone after institutions where they put a player back in knowing that they should have had him on the sideline. Now there's strict guidelines to prevent those types of things from happening, but not all coaches follow it. So, you know, parents out there that have your kids and athletes in football, you know, you got to be cognizant of it. And if you don't have the right gear, the right helmet, you know, those types of things, you really got to stay on top of, because it changes your first priority. If someone gets hurt bad enough, it obviously changes the trajectory and the fact that they're students first, athletes second. So I'm watching this closely, and it's going to be something that just keeps on coming up and up. And I represent a fair amount of professional athletes, and I have seen it time and time again where we have talked about how dangerous the sport can be, especially when the basic fundamentals aren't taught and the standards and guidelines aren't kept. So something out there for all those parents. And if you have any questions on it, feel free to call in 1-800-859-0WJR. 1-800-859-0WJR. We have had several great stories going on, and I know several of my listeners, our listeners here behind the bench, wanted us to carry through, and we're going to, I promise you, carry through on this murder that took place out in eastern Michigan of the lovely young lady that was strangled and killed in her apartment complex, and we were linking that case up. We have linked, I believe, anyway, and we can show that we've linked that that case, the similarities to that case in 2008 of another homicide that took place, and the 2008 homicide. Someone was prosecuted and is in prison. In 2012, a similar, if not almost identical, type situation of this young lady that was killed in Ypsilanti took place. And obviously, it couldn't have been the man in prison. And that is who, for whom we, Derek Oliver, who we believe is innocent behind bars right now because of too many similarities, and that can't be a copycat for a number of reasons that I can't get into. Law enforcement has asked me to back off of that for now, and I told my listeners last month we would jump into it, but I respect law enforcement, and I'm going to abide by their wishes and hopefully let them ferret out what's going on and nab the bad guy that has done these heinous crimes. That being said, there's some other things we want to get into, things that are going on in the federal system right now with the healthcare fraud and the healthcare fraud unit. Also, we want to talk a little bit about this situation with people hacking into computers. It is becoming more and more prevalent. You just saw one of the biggest hacking episodes into Chase Bank and other banks with people stealing the identities of their patrons. We'll get into that, and we'll be right back right after this with Behind the Bench.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. So, you know, we had one of the better interviewers and better investigative reporters on with us tonight, Kevin Dietz. Kevin Dietz was talking to us about the Melendez trial, and I just I got my phone kind of filled up here on the text messaging of one of the witnesses, his partner, and how that played into the case and the messaging that took place came in and Bob Donaldson beat up. Bob is the prosecutor in the case. Obviously, Melendez is on trial for assault with intent to do great bodily harm, a 10-year offense on Mr. Dent. He pulls Mr. Dent over, and ultimately, you can see from the video, pulls him out of the vehicle and assaults him in a way that is the question. The injuries that were sustained, and obviously the violence of that stop, makes everybody, at looking at that video to say, are you kidding me? I mean, what was necessary at that time? But obviously there's two sides to every story, and Jim Thomas, he went at it and has gone at it. Jim is, I've spoken with Jim, and obviously Jim follows the rules of ethics. He can't talk about the case, his own case, while it's going on. He has at times given interviews, but it's usually very benign material that he will talk about while he's in the throes of it. He's a great attorney, and he has diffused a lot of that tape by playing it over and over and over again, and showing how each particular move is not a chokehold, but perhaps a restraint, and not something that was overly excessive because, for whatever reason, of where the blow landed or the threat that he Melendez was under. But the text messages I've just received, or the questions I were just posed to me, was how is it that the witness, that being Mr. Melendez's partner, how did his text messages come into evidence as it relates to credibility for using racial slurs? Well, the rule of evidence, obviously, Judge Vonda Evans, who's been a staple on our program and someone that's highly regarded, and I must tell you, is sharp and on top of the rules of evidence, got into, allowed those slurs to come in to show bias or credibility or prejudice as it relates to what he was testifying to and the veracity for which the witness was testifying to when he says Officer Melendez didn't do anything wrong. Well, when you use those racial slurs, obviously that's going to come in to show, your taint and slant towards why you may be testifying the way you were. And as Kevin put it out, to answer the questions that just came to me, as Kevin put it out there, it had an impact. He was telling me that it was palpable in the jury. That was a boom to them as it related to what his partner, Melendez's partner, said. But the other side of that coin, Melendez, he's the one on trial, and his text messages came in too, and there was nothing in there as it related to being racial slurs or being a racist. That's the question. I mean, Melendez is on trial here, and the way Kevin Dietz put it to us tonight, folks, it sounds to me as though there very well may be a hung jury in this case. that will surprise a lot if there is, because many people thought that just from a layman's standpoint, looking at that video, how could anyone, how could the prosecution lose? But cross-examination and a jury, they're seeing things and hearing things that, and getting the whole story. We're not sitting in their shoes, and the evidence, we're not getting all of it sitting out here as Joe Sixpack. We're just getting snippets of it. But I can tell you this much, being in cases and trying too many cases to count, where there's been video or text messages that have come into play, you're always trying to get the context of those things, and you're trying to put what it is that's happening in context and what the words are in context, and you don't always get all the meaning. So the burden always is with the prosecution when you have a criminal case, and that burden is beyond a reasonable doubt. They have to prove each and every element beyond a reasonable doubt, and if there is reasonable doubt based on your common sense, yeah, there's a not guilty verdict. So that's what the justice system's all about. And I can tell you this much, having been with both of them, tried cases, both with Mr. Donaldson, both as a prosecutor I've been with him, and as a defense attorney, he's one of the best. The same goes true to that of Jim Thomas. I wanted to get to some issues here with the healthcare fraud that is going on, and what's not going on, the stuff that is folklore and the stuff that's real. We'll have to wait until next time on that. The high school football playoffs, what an exciting time. And so many great schools out there, so many Davids and Goliaths. You have the Berkeley Bears out there under Coach Sikora and his crew. First time in history have gotten this far. And you got the Allen Park Jaguars, they're making it up there too. So I can tell you where I'm going to be over this weekend, and we'll be back.